ladies and gentlemen, nerds and individuals of all gender identities, please welcome to the Nerdy Notions podcast. I am your host, Sasha Kaplan, and I'm joined today by my great friend,
Kat. Hello, guys. It's been a minute.
It has been a minute. And today, wait, why are we here again?
We are here for Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Let me think. Teenager walks on walls?
Yes, that's what he does.
Okay. Of course, we are here to discuss Spider-Man No Way Home, because we were on a spiritual Spider-Man journey for a little bit there before we got sidetracked by life.
Pretty much. Since, in order to really understand this movie, you have to kind of know all the other Spider-Man movies. And we'll get into why. Though if you haven't seen this movie, I don't know what you're doing listening to this. And go watch it.
This is the spoiler show, guys. We literally spoil everything. So if you don't know already, you're
we can't help you.
You can't come at us later and be like, well, Kat and Sasha spoiled Spider-Man. Well, go read comic books, and then none of this is a spoiler anyway, so...
Spoiler, he gets bitten by a radioactive spider. Not in this movie.
Not in any of these movies, actually.
Well,
the trilogy.
That's a different story altogether.
So where do we begin with Spider-Man No Way Home?
Let's start with the basic premise of this movie. Yeah. So this movie is basically the direct aftermath of the previous Spider-Man movie where Mysterio is defeated and he releases a video clip saying that Spider-Man tried to kill him and that Spider-Man is Peter Parker. And then being Peter Parker, his life spirals out of control from there.
And everybody gets arrested by, what is it, damage control?
Yes.
This sequence is utterly hilarious in many ways because they have no evidence. All they have to go on is Mysterio's, I guess, statement before he dies when he had time to record. That is anybody's guess, but that's not the point. The point is this man makes a claim and we kind of have to deal with the consequences of the Mysterio's actions. So Peter is taken to damage control. He's like arrested essentially. But like, I don't see anybody arresting Captain America or Doctor Strange. Do you think that like if one of the Chitauri agents suddenly put on and started speaking in English and be like, well, the Avengers are bullying me, that like damage control would have shown up?
I would love to watch damage control try to arrest Doctor Strange and see what happens.
That's a good point. Who knows what shenanigans Doctor Strange has done, but is it like because they're dealing with like cosmic bad guys or universe bending bad guys and Peter's over here catching criminals?
I guess no one cares if they're not from Earth. It's Earth racism. Like, what is the racism called against aliens?
Speciesism?
I guess.
You know what? We're going to be here a while if we start unpacking all of this. But so let's just get back to this movie.
So after Mysterio's declaration and Peter gets arrested by damage control, we get one of the most fabulous cameos in any MCU movie. And we finally get Daredevil into the MCU.
Well, technically we get Matt Murdock in the MCU.
Yes, but in all honesty, it's Daredevil.
It's Matt Murdock. I don't know what you're talking about. Matt Murdock's not Daredevil. Come on, he's blind.
Right, of course. He can't be Daredevil. What am I talking about?
No, it's actually really cool that they didn't really introduce Daredevil, but they introduced Matt Murdock because what ends up happening is Matt serves as Peter's lawyer. And there's the scene that I always love when somebody throws a brick through the window and Matt catches it with his reflexes before Peter can react. And Peter's like, how did you do that? And Matt responds with, I'm a really good lawyer.
This movie's actually really funny, but it's a lot of it is front loaded in the latter half. And we'll get to that because I think most folks remember this movie for like the last hour.
To be fair, a lot happens in that hour. But one of the really cool themes about, I think, this Peter Parker and just kind of about this movie in general is that Peter wants to help the bad guys. He wants to cure them, wants to save them. He's not trying to stop them because they're in a very unfortunate set of circumstances.
That's with some prompting with Aunt May, but that's a little bit later in the movie. For now, the charges get dropped from damage control, and Spider-Man tries to live his normal life. Him, MJ, and Ned all apply to go to college. However, due to the controversy of him being Spider-Man, they are not accepted. And from there, he goes to Doctor Strange to see if he can get help getting into college.
Well, hold on. He technically goes to, say, help his friends, and he tries to convince Doctor Strange, like, you know, ever since, you know, Mysterio, you know, outed me as Spider-Man, I'm now, like, my entire life's turned upside down. Can you make everybody forget that I am Spider-Man? And Doctor Strange is like, you know what? Yeah, sure. Why not? It's also important to note that Doctor Strange had to ask permission to do this from the Sorcerer Supreme because Doctor Strange is not the Sorcerer Supreme.
Well, yeah, because he got blipped for 5 years. They had to replace him.
Exactly. Wong, the actual Sorcerer Supreme, is dealing with other stuff. And he's like, just leave me out of this. Like, I don't want to know. I have enough things to do. Like, get out of here. So Doctor Strange does the spell and it's going well, and Peter's like, oh wait, well, not everybody can forget. And basically the spell becomes so chaotic as a result of all of these extra little, like, oh, she can remember, and like MJ can remember and Aunt May can't remember, that it essentially causes the spell to like fracture or something. And as a result of making everybody forget who Spider-Man is, it essentially starts pulling people that know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man into that world. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's essentially what happens. This movie is actually very good at introducing the multiverse concept.
And it does so in a way that kind of still makes it feel very grounded, which is actually very refreshing.
It really is. This movie is well done in a lot of aspects and really ties together multiple parts, and it does a really good balancing act. So the spell gets screwed up. Doctor Strange has to lock it in a box. And then him and Peter have actually this really funny conversation about, did you just talk to the administration? And Peter says, you can do that?
Which, to be fair, you know, Peter's had a lot of stuff going on. He hasn't really had a lot of time to process everything he's been through. Right now, his only goal is like, I need to help my friends. And their goal at the beginning of the movie was everybody wanted to get into MIT. Everybody applies to MIT, including, for reasons I will never understand, Flash Thompson also applies to MIT. Out of the trio, no one gets into MIT. And then Flash Thompson gets into MIT because reasons. And he also wrote a fraudulent book where he claims to be a best friend of Spider-Man. Funny how the alleged best friend of Spider-Man gets into college, but his actual friends don't.
That, I think that's part of the irony of it, and also just showcasing how much of an ass this Flash Thompson is.
Yeah, but it's cool. You know, Peter decides, through shenanigans and through the use of Flash Thompson, he finds this lady who works for she was a provost or something for MIT. And he tries to talk to her, and he's getting there, and this woman doesn't really feel like she wants to hear him out. And then Doc Ock shows up.
Yeah, Doc Ock shows up and starts destroying cars and the bridge and everything that they're on because Peter tries to catch her on the way to the airport. And of course, we have a pretty good action sequence.
Yeah.
Where he has to stop Doc Ock, he has to save the woman. The woman's like, you saved me, Peter, so now I'll give you a chance to go to college.
Oh my god, you're not a supervillain. What's also, I like the pacing of this particular aspect of the movie as well, because you have this buildup of like, oh, things are happening on the bridge, what is going on? And then you see the claw. And I love Doc Ock.
He is so good, and I'll just say it, all the villains do such a great job pulling back these characters that they haven't played in, like, years for some of them. And they really fit well into the dynamic, and they all bounce off each other excellently. The big thing to come out this fight, other than Peter being able to go to college or getting a chance to go to college is that he gets control of Doc Ock's arms.
And then he uses that to put the car down. And so he basically, it's like a, you know, gotta catch them all Pokemon style, except instead of a Pokeball, you have a little wizard device that you just press a button and it shoots a laser beam or magic beam. And then it just like traps everybody in this like little, what did they call it? The Doctor Strange's dungeon basement.
Right. So basically they bring Doc Ock to Doctor Strange's dungeon basement. Doctor Strange is like, you gotta catch them all. And he gives Peter a device that allows him to catch the villains that are coming in from the various multiverses. And then Peter starts going on a hunt for everybody. Quick thing, Green Goblin also shows up on this bridge, but escapes.
So let's talk about the villains in this movie, right? Because we have Doc Ock, we have Gobby, we have Electro, who exists. To be fair, Jamie Foxx plays a very good Electro and actually gave him a lot of layers and made a very bland supervillain very interesting. So props to him and the writers for that, because I never liked Electro in the comics. The Lizard, Dr. Connors, who was incredibly underutilized, but also all that CGI was expensive.
It was, and you also have Sandman.
And you have Sandman. So essentially we have two villains from The Amazing Spider-Man, three villains from the OG
trilogy,
Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. And then I guess our Doctor Strange is sort of like a secondary antagonist in this movie unintentionally, because he's like, okay, well, we got to send all these people back. But it turns out if he sends them back, they're going to be sent back to wherever they were before they were taken, which was the moment before they died.
So Peter, after a conversation with Aunt May, is like, we can't let all these folks die. Let's try to cure them. And then that leads to Peter pushing back against Doctor Strange, and probably one of the best action sequences in this movie, maybe only topped by the one at the Statue of Liberty at the very end, but Peter fights Doctor Strange and beats him with math.
Yep. The fact that it was the power of math that ultimately defeated him is so, so epic. And what I really love about, especially this Peter Parker, is sure, we get a little bit of the whole, you know, photographer aspect of it, but really, it's so much more the science nerd, right? From the very beginning of this trilogy, and technically before that, when Peter first shows up in the Civil War, you establish him as this, like, very dorky, nerdy kind of Spider-Man who's still very green as Spider-Man. And, you know, we talked a little bit how Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man was different from Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. And so this one is just adding another layer. So he's not a photographer. He's not a skater nerd. He's just a science nerd. And we love that for him.
We do love that for him. So he ends up taking all these supervillains, after some convincing, to Happy's apartment, because Happy is still in love with Aunt May, despite the fact that they broke up.
Which was just kind of a really unnecessary plot point that didn't go anywhere.
It kind of does, but it doesn't for the sheer reason of what happens to Aunt May in this movie.
Right, but whether or not he and Aunt May were dating or not at this time does not change the emotional landscape of Aunt May's death in this movie.
Fair. So basically they're at Happy's apartment and a lot of shenanigans ensue, a lot of back and forth. It's great dynamics. The chemistry of all the villains are great. They're all really funny against each other as you got these conflicting personalities. And the big thing that comes out of this moment is that they cure Doc Ock.
And Alfred Molina was, you know, we talked about this, I think, when we recorded Spider-Man 2, is like, first of all, incredible actor. Absolutely incredible actor in everything that he does. And he really gave such a human performance. So raw, so real. And so to see Doc Ock back was just like such that out of everybody that we saw return, that was like the biggest nostalgia moment for me. As much as and as wonderful as William Dafoe was as the Green Goblin. So to see this like look of relief, and we see kind of like two sides of it. First on the bridge, when Doc Ock takes off Peter's mask, or Peter's mask falls off or whatever, and he's like, you're not Peter Parker. And I'm like, well, technically yes, technically no. And now you see this look of relief when he is now in control of the arms and the arms are not controlling him. What's also really incredible to the acting, like William Dafoe, first of all, again, incredible actor. The duality that he shows is not, he's not playing Norman Osborn possessed by the Green Goblin. He's playing Norman Osborn and then he's playing Green Goblin. They are completely separate characters. And like the way his face changes is just props. All the praise, all the praise.
Oh yeah, no, all the acting in this movie is superb across the board. Like, they're all great. I loved every moment seeing them on screen. There was not a bad time with any of the villains that they brought in. Again, the only one that's really underutilized is the Lizard, but he's probably the most expensive to do.
And given the already massive amounts of magic, CGI shenanigans that are involved in this movie, like, it would have been so cool to see more of Dr. Connors, but it was still cool to see, you know, what happens later and as the movie progresses. So, I mean, long story short, Aunt May dies.
Yeah, so the Green, during this, in their apartment, the Green Goblin comes out, destroys the apartment, the villains scatter, and he kills Aunt May. And this is the true emotional crux of this movie, because I feel like from Aunt May's death, it shifts into the emotional burden Peter carries. And I think that's what's going to be the carry through just based off the trailers for the next Spider-Man movie.
Yep. So as we know, and yes, it is totally not a coincidence that we are recording this so close to the premiere of Spider-Man Brand New Day. Haha. So the consequences of Peter's actions in this movie will feed into directly into the next one. So with all of this, Peter just, you know, disappears because he cannot function. Aunt May is dead. Meanwhile, MJ and Ned are sort of in their own thing. And during all the kerfuffle with Doctor Strange, Ned ended up with the sling ring. And Ned's grandmother had always told him that, like, his family has magic, that the family's, like, imbued with it. He's like, I wonder if I have magic. And they set up this plot point very well when Ned meets Doctor Strange. Because he asked him about this, and Doctor Strange is like, you should, he's like, well, like, I can feel this tingling in my hands. And Doctor Strange is like, you should see a doctor about that. But as it turns out, Ned was right, or Ned's grandma was right. And he plays around with the sling ring, trying to find Peter, trying to find Peter. And he does find two Peters. But they are the wrong kind of Peter. And seeing, like, I remember gasping in the theater seeing Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker and as Spider-Man in the room together and doing Spidey shenanigans was just so, it was nostalgic and heartwarming, but it didn't feel forced.
No, it didn't. And this is the part of the movie that everyone remembers and what this movie is known for. We can go through, like, each little inch, like, each little part of all the Spider-Man shenanigans. There's some fabulous lines in this movie where they go meet the grieving Peter. They talk about the all their losses that they went through and everything. And they really connect and understand. And after that, it's just a lot of, like, quippy lines. It's a lot of them working together. It's a lot of them figuring out the cures for their respective villains. And finally culminating in the battle on the Statue of Liberty, where they work together to defeat everybody. The Green Goblin breaks the spell so that it starts ripping apart the multiverse. And the...
I thought Doctor Strange... Oh no, because Doctor... So Doctor Strange shows back up. And then Goblin shows up at the same time, and Gobby uses one of his pumpkin bombs inside of the thingy that's containing the spell, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah. Then...
Gotta get my...
So then Peter, of course, has to make the decision for everyone to forget Peter Parker, and we see that happen. There's a lot of tears being shed. He has a very touching scene with MJ and Ned afterwards, and everyone forgets who he is.
It's just so sad, and you feel it really is like a very good and emotional scene, culminating in the fact that, you know, Peter's losing his friends. He lost his aunt, like right, he lost a parent, And now he's losing his two best friends in the entire world. So after this moment, Peter Parker is all alone. And whether Ned and I guess Ned and MJ remember helping Spider-Man then, right?
I guess so.
So they have memories of working with Spider-Man, but and Peter has memories of working with them, but they are strangers to him, or he is a stranger to them. So this is like, that's it. Peter's by himself. He has no support system. He has no Avengers. He has no Happy, no anybody. It's just Peter Parker.
And I hope they carry this through in the next movie, but we'll talk about the next movie once it actually comes out and we'll see how good it is. For now, let's focus on this one because there's a lot of scenes to dissect.
I mean, goodness, where to even continue from here? Because we covered the crust of the movie, but what really, there's so much to talk about in this movie and we've already covered so much of it, but the chemistry between the three Peters was so well done, and it's really a testament to all three of the actors being such wonderful actors and really understanding the character they were playing. But it's also interesting to see that every Peter is in a very different part of his life, right? Tobey Maguire's Peter is actually a Peter Parker that went to therapy.
He does talk like he's been to therapy, and he's kind of like the older brother figure, the mentor, boosting the other ones up. Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man is still like emotionally destroyed from the death of Gwen Stacy, and still recovering from that and trying to balance his life between Peter and Spider-Man. And of course, you've got MCU Peter, who just watched Aunt May die.
Oh, if I had a nickel every time a Spider-Man, if Peter Parker watched somebody get killed, we'd have a lot of nickels. But what's interesting is, this is the weird thing about the MCU Peter Parker existence. Uncle Ben only seemed to have existed in the first movie, and then they're like, oh, we don't need to reference Uncle Ben or think about Uncle Ben ever again. It's just kind of weird.
This is my biggest problem with this movie, and I can talk about this forever, and I'm not going to because I don't think you'll listen to an 8-hour podcast of me ranting about why they made this decision and why it doesn't work. MCU Spider-Man never had Ben Parker, and Ben was really the crux of what made Spider-Man Spider-Man. The death of Ben and how it happens is so important to the development of Peter Parker Spider-Man in most mediums. MCU Peter Parker got tied up with Iron Man. Now, say what you will about that relationship, whether you like it or not, but it really took away from that relationship with Ben Parker and what made Spider-Man Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, because in Homecoming, they do, so in Civil War and Homecoming, they do reference Ben without saying it, which was kind of annoying. Like, we all know who you're talking about. You don't have to be coy about it. But in Civil War, Peter talks about the fact that, like, if you have the power to do something and you, he gives the great power, great responsibility speech without saying something exactly that. To Iron Man about how, if you don't do something and you have the power to, you lose someone. And the implication was supposed to be that, like, oh, Uncle Ben died. In, I think it's in Homecoming, he and Aunt May go out to dinner and they do talk about losing Ben. We even see, I think, Ben Parker's suitcase. But the legacy and the emotional impact of losing Uncle Ben, I think you're right, is very much overshadowed by Iron Man shenanigans.
And this is where we lead to this problem, because Uncle Ben's death is what sets Spider-Man on the path to becoming who he is. Like, that is where he starts embracing the great power comes great responsibility. That's where we see that come out and him really stepping into that role. Because, of course, Peter's Spider-Man before Ben Parker's death, but he doesn't embrace it and become who we see him as until after he dies. And it really is Peter's fault that Uncle Ben dies, like, in any kind of medium.
Well, it's sort of, you know, Peter's inactions. He learns the power of great power and great responsibility, because he had the power to stop the robber, whoever he was, that then goes on to shoot Uncle Ben when he had the power to do it. And I understand them not wanting to redo that again, because we saw it in, you know, the first Spider-Man trilogy. We saw it in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies. So I do understand not wanting to do it again, although this is sort of like Batman's parents. Like, you can't not do Batman's parents being dead. That's the source of the driving force that leads to the actions of our hero. So losing Aunt May in this film felt very much a little unnecessary, but I also understand why they did it this way. Does that make sense? Like, I recognize that the council has made a decision. I don't like this decision, and I can't ignore it, but I don't like it.
Like I'm actually fine with Aunt May dying. It's the way they did it. Because they gave her the great power comes great responsibility line.
Which technically is something he would have already known.
And this is where the problem of that is. Peter Parker has been the Spider-Man for years at this point. It's not like he just got turned into Spider-Man. He's been embracing the great power comes great responsibility thing.
And he's already faced various consequences to that effect, right? He went to space. He got blipped for 5 years. He lost Tony Stark, who was like a mentor to him, however annoying I find all of that. You know, the devastation of so many things have already happened, losing any kind of sense of privacy and future. So then to have Aunt May die and give the great power and great responsibility speech is like, you're a little late to the party.
Exactly. And it's like, why do this now? And I get why, because it is the Spider-Man line. Like, all the others had their great power with great responsibility moment. Peter never got his because of the way they just structured his entire storyline. So now they're working backwards.
So, you know, at this point, you know, whatever happened, happened. Peter already knew the lesson of great power, great responsibility. I think it's something about him, maybe in part, knowing the limits of that power. Because as we see, Peter was ready to completely murder Goblin. Right? And it's Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, it's OG Spider-Man, who has to stop him. And if Goblin, and what's really cool about that scene, actually, is that no words are exchanged. He's not doing this like, Peter, you can't do this, and I have to kill him because he's a bad guy. There was none of that. There was just like this unspoken Spidey vibe thing happening, wherein they kind of both understand where they're coming from.
Exactly. Like, if there's anyone who's going to get how much that he hates the Green Goblin, it's Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. Like, 110%. So I'm glad they did that, at least. And I'm still on, like, the Aunt May death thing, because at the end of the day, the other problem I have with this is that it's technically not Peter's fault.
That's the other important thing. But it's, you're right, because, you know, we were talking before we started recording, and it was the fact that it was Aunt May who suggested he try to save them. It was Aunt May that brought Goblin, or Norman Osborn and Goblin, into the fold. So Peter didn't do anything. And then ultimately, I guess it was Peter's fault in the sense that, like, Peter trying to cure him led to Goblin taking over more permanently, that then led to the actions of Aunt May. But it's sort of like, I don't know. It's like if I load the gun with blanks and then somebody else comes along and loads the gun with that doesn't have blanks and then uses that same gun that I thought I had loaded to hurt somebody, is like, am I at fault in that case?
Yeah. I mean, like, the problem is that all of Aunt May's decisions is what actually led to her death. Her encouraging Peter to try to heal the villains. Like, it's not Peter's fault that she was at the flat or the apartment because, like, they needed a someplace safe to go. Like, there was no way of knowing that Norman Osborn would turn back into the Green Goblin.
And none of them knew enough about the Goblin to sort of even suspect anything. And the way William Dafoe plays it is so subtle and so well done. And you get to this moment where Peter's having this, like, his Spidey senses tingling. And he's looking at all of the villains and it's like, it's somebody. And the implication is like, you kind of start to assume it's Electro because Electro's been the cranky one. And then Heath whips and it goes to Osborne, and then you see the shift. Like, it's so well done that, like, but also this is Peter Parker, right? It doesn't matter if he was completely not responsible for her death. Just him being in proximity of any kind of action that directly or indirectly led to her death was gonna, you know, break Peter into itty bitty tiny little spidey pieces.
Yes, pretty much exactly that. So he goes through his emotional crisis, and from there, the other Spider-Men help him not move on from it, but help him start to process that emotional pain. Because at the end of the day, they really know how trauma feels, especially poor Andrew Garfield Spider-Man.
But also there's that moment where they all come to the rooftop and they're like, we know how you feel. They're like, don't try to tell me how you feel. I'm like, no, Bubba, they do actually literally know how you feel.
Oh, yeah. They both watched Uncle Ben die in their arms. Then Andrew Garfield gets to watch Gwen Stacy's dad die in his arms. And then he gets to watch Gwen Stacy die in his arms.
Yep. So OG had Uncle Ben and Harry. And then Garfield had Uncle Ben and Gwen Stacy. Oh, and
Gwen Stacy's dad, whose name I...
Captain Stacy. His first name is irrelevant. His first name is Captain
now.
He's
Captain Stacy.
So with all that in mind, there's a lot of really good dynamics that happen during this whole sequence. Them trying to work separately and it not working. He's like, okay, we have to be the Avengers. And they're like, what the heck are the Avengers? Like, wait, you don't have the Avengers? They're Earth's Mightiest. You know what? We don't have time for this. We're going to go and work as a team, and I'm going to call the shots here. And then it's like, because I've been on a team and you guys haven't been on a team. So that was really fun. There's a lot of great moments where, like, Amazing Spider-Man Peter tries to help OG Spider-Man with, like, his back issues. He has his moments of self-deprecation, and OG Peter's like, no, you're amazing. And you cut that when we were watching it.
Yeah, they literally call Andrew Garfield amazing. Like, it's a really cute line read. The only thing I wish they did more is I wish they made him as quippy as he was in his movies, because that's some of the best part of the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
But at the same time, this is like post all of that Spider-Man. This is Andrew Garfield Spider-Man in this case. It's just like, there's a moment they have in the lab where he talks about, oh, like, this is like being, having friends and having loved ones is not in the cards for guys like us. And you can see Tobey Maguire Spider-Man being like, man, this dude's going through it. He needs some therapy. But Andrew Garfield, essentially, his Peter Parker just basically became Spider-Man full-time. And as we were watching, I was like, how do you pay rent? You live in New York. You can't afford to just be Spider-Man this entire time.
He lives with Aunt May. It's fine. He also has a subway system he can live in.
That's true. He's got his dad's cool, you know, underground secret lab. You can put, like, a, you know, cooktop and everything in there. It's fine. All right. He lives... Oh, my God. The Spider-Man lives in the sewers.
It's fine. Don't worry about that too much, guys. Also, J. Jonah Jameson is also in this movie.
And I love and hate it at the same time, because I love J. Jonah Jameson. I like him in the Spider universe. What I didn't like as much, I think, is the fact that they made him, like, InfoWars-y.
They kind of did, and it's really, I think, part of that is just mostly at the time just comic relief. Like, that's what he's there for. We wanted to see J. Jonah Jameson because A, it's J. Jonah Jameson, and it's part of the comic relief because you need it, because there's so many emotional punches in this movie. Like, between Aunt May's death, between everyone forgetting who Peter Parker is, if you kept that tone through the entire film, it wouldn't have worked as well.
Yeah, I get what you're coming from. I just, sometimes it feels like people forget that despite his psychotic, at times, attitude towards Spider-Man, that J. Jonah Jameson is a respected journalist. Overall, I think the question now is, how do we rate these last three Spider-Man movies?
That's a good question. So the problem with this movie is that it cannot function without No Way Home.
But that's okay. But that doesn't affect how we necessarily rank them in terms of quality compared to the previous films. And in terms of like if I had to pick, I think weirdly, I think they work in backwards order. You can make the argument that No Way Home is the best out of them, then No Way Home, then Homecoming. But at the same time, I could also see them being flipped. But at the end of the day, compared to the previous Spider-Man trilogy and the Spider-Man duo of films, this is the most solid Spider-Man trilogy across the board.
From a quality perspective, yes. I would say he's not my favorite Spider-Man. I still, like, out of all the Spider-Man movies that we have watched, I still say Amazing Spider-Man 1 is my favorite. But in terms of, like, the average quality, all three movies are solid. Now, I have my issues with all three of them, but they're all very solid movies. Like, I wasn't ever angry at any of the decisions being made. It was just like, why questions.
Yeah, and I think it's a case of, like, I think if we're just looking at it purely from, you know, kind of just unbiased of, like, what stories worked across the different films without issues, then this one is the most solid, right? Amazing Spider-Man by itself is a great movie. When you pair Amazing Spider-Man with Amazing Spider-Man 2, you're just like, oh God, why? When you take the original trilogy of Spider-Man 1, you have Spider-Man 2, which is basically Spider-Man 1, and then you have Spider-Man 3, which was just why? So this one is, I think, the most consistent in terms of story characterization and follow through that makes it feel like a solid story.
It's a solid, continuous story. That being said, these are also the Spider-Man movies I'm least likely going to rewatch in the future for a couple of different elements. One, like, again, Tom Holland's Spider-Man got caught in the I'm Iron Man's protege thing, which I wasn't a massive fan of, but quality-wise, it wasn't bad. I am not the biggest fan of Ned or this version of MJ. Though I really like, I think their relationship in this movie is super cute.
I think MJ was a very difficult character to kind of pin down, especially because of, like, I mean, it's been so long since I've seen Homecoming, but she sort of she's very much an outsider, and Peter kind of likes her, but we don't know much about her, and she comes off just very pessimistic, and I think the movies did a really good job of building our love for this version of MJ. I think the last film cemented that a little bit more for me because I like the fact that she got to do more. She got to kind of be in the action, and she figured out that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, which is not difficult to figure out, but it is lovely to see people do it.
Yeah, I felt like she didn't do as much in this movie other than kind of be an emotional crux. Like, don't get me wrong, she does do things. She helps comfort Peter. They have, again, very cute relationship, but I think she was more dynamic in the previous one than in this one. But overall, like, solid movies. I think they're better than the original trilogy, definitely better than Amazing Spider-Man 2. But, like, this movie, what it really just wants me to do is, like, I want to see the after effects in the other Spider-Man universes. Like, what does Amazing Spider-Man's universe look like after this movie? What does Tobey Maguire's universe look like? I want to see him and MJ actually be happy, because they never got that in the original trilogy.
Yeah, because I think in Spider-Man 3, the last thing we see is MJ running away on her own wedding to join Peter, right?
I thought was that how that ended?
I don't remember. I kind of just blocked Spider-Man 3 from my brain.
Honestly, I kind of did too.
Either way, it would be nice to see, because like we talked about, like, Toby's Peter in this movie is very put together. He's sort of, like I said, he went to therapy because he feels like a character that has worked through his trauma. He is not ruled by his trauma, right? So I think it'd be so cool to see, especially because, like, his conversation with Maguire's Peter, no, sorry, Tobey Maguire's conversation with Andrew Garfield's Peter, there we go, too many Peters, about how his, like, love life is complicated, but they're making it work, said a lot without saying a lot.
It really did. And I don't think we can kind of end this episode also without talking about the role Doctor Strange played.
Yeah, yeah. Doctor Strange is, I don't know, he's kind of the guy that's right in this movie. Like, I hate to say it, but Peter screwed up the spell. You know, Dr. James was kind of trying to undo all the damage that Peter did just in the sake of, like, you know, maintaining the laws of the universe. But Peter is a character that sees the humanity in everything, I think a little bit more than Dr. Strange. So he sees, like, hey, you're sending these characters back to die. And Dr. Strange's answer is, they're supposed to die. So, like, not my problem, not my universe. So he's very much like a antagonist a little bit here.
He is, but then he's also kind of a mentor figure to Peter. Like, he helps guide him to, hey, go talk to admissions, go talk to MIT, see about having that conversation. And he still kind of tries to help out Peter even after he screws up the spell. And then the very last scene with Peter asking him, hey, just have everyone forget I exist. It's tearful. Like, you can see Doctor Strange breaking up a little bit because he does love Peter. He even says so in the movie. And it is heartbreaking for him too, watching this kid sacrifice everything in order to make sure that their universe is safe.
And, you know, that's that is kind of the crust of who Spider-Man is in many ways. He is the kind of guy, you know, in a very Captain America-like way, who will put his own life on the line for other people. And he puts his future, he puts his entire livelihood and existence on the line to save the multiverse, or at least this particular universe. So yeah, we shall see how we feel about the rest of the MCU, but I think Doctor Strange's role in this movie is really interesting, especially because I think it's a case of, like, he doesn't quite know what to do with Peter, because Peter is a fellow superhero who helped him save the universe against Thanos, but he's a kid.
And at the end of the day, he's still making those kinds of not, I won't say not adult decisions, but he's still kind of trapped in, like, hey, I'm still a teenager, I just graduated high school, and making those decisions that come with, like, age and knowledge and experience.
Yep.
But I'm excited for the next movie. The trailer looks great, though. Who knows what that means for the MCU, and we'll see where they take the story from there. What I don't want them to see is them immediately reversing, like, everything that this movie went through, but hopefully, maybe we'll get a Gwen Stacy. Maybe we'll get a different love interest. We will find out.
I doubt the love interest. So this is obviously pure speculation because the movie hasn't come out yet. Or depending on when you're watching, listening to this, that we have not seen it. So it will be interesting if they do introduce some kind of love interest for Spider-Man. I'm in a very small pool of people that I believe that Peter Parker should be dating Kitty Pryde. Sorry, MJ fans. Sorry, Gwen Stacy fans. It's Kitty Pryde. But, you know, we know Sadie Sink is in the movie. We know that MJ is going to still play a prominent role in this movie. I think somehow it will reverse itself, but it will be interesting to see how they do it.
Well, once that movie comes out, we will do another episode and finally finish out the Spider-Man movies for now and see where it goes from there. In the meantime, what's next on our plates for us?
Good question. We have two options. We have Moon Knight and we have the Multiverse of Madness. Because the after credit scene of Spider-Man No Way Home has a little scene that sets up Multiverse of Madness.
Yay! To be fair, I actually like Multiverse of Madness, but...
Okay, Multiverse of Madness it is. Anything that saves me from having to watch Moon Knight again. So with that in mind, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to follow us, follow the podcast on txhthockey.com or X75 Productions. You can follow us on Spotify. And you can follow me because somebody's still anti-social media.
Look, in this day and age, I think it's the smart move.
To some degree, yes, but you have to promote. You have to do something, even if it's small and not, like, just because you have social media doesn't mean you have to constantly be on social media. I keep sending you really cool things on Instagram that I have to text you about instead of just sending it to you on Instagram.
I am on Instagram.
But you do actually look at the things I send you on Instagram.
Yes.
It would be nice if you would acknowledge that you have received and seen these things on Instagram so I'm not left wondering.
I will start doing that.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Be sure to follow at Jewish Comics Queen, and we will catch you on the flip side of the Multiverse of Madness.
Keep swinging.